Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by today. I thought today it would be interesting to talk about relationships. I decided that we'd call the show A Meeting of the Minds, which, of course, is what relationships are about. Being able to see eye to eye every now and then is almost imperative to a good relationship. It's not necessary to see eye to eye every day, I don't believe. I think that that would be incredibly boring. But I do believe that every now and then, meeting at the same point and sharing each other's opinions is a good thing for a healthy relationship, as well as being able to discuss the differences about whatever you're discussing and being able to agree to disagree. Real important for a good relationship, in my opinion. I thought it would be fun to talk about couples, obviously, friends, siblings, parents and their children, and vice versa, co-workers, and even people in the street, people that we bump into at Walmart that we've never met, don't know anything about. Those kind of relationships are about what we talked about earlier this week when we talked about taking things at face value and not prejudging somebody by their appearance. And I think that relationships have a lot to do with those things as well. Assumptions. That used to be one of my favorite sayings. Assume makes an ass out of you and me. I always thought that was just absolutely perfect because you really should never assume anything. I think that assuming things puts you in the back seat of a car you should be driving. So a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today, I hope, are going to be things that will maybe a little light bulb will come on and you'll realize how you can actually make some of your relationships a little bit better. Because at the end of the day, it's about give and take. It's about not always being right, even if you are so sure that you are, and about sometimes giving the benefit of the doubt when you feel it's an opportunity to stand on your soapbox. Sometimes hard for me, by the way. Sometimes hard for me. I, a good deal of the time, especially if I'm talking to somebody younger, I don't mean younger like 60 instead of 65. I mean like 20 instead of 65. Because of the years I've put in, I often feel like what I have to say is going to be closer to the truth, more appropriate for the situation, and in essence, the truth. But every now and then when I shut up and listen to a 20-something-year-old, I learn a lot. And I think that's one of the important things about a relationship, being able to listen. I'm going to bring in Shell. I haven't heard yet from Monica this morning, but I'm sure she will message me if she wants me to call her house because her phone isn't working. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Renee. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you today?
I'm doing good, doing good. Hectic. I got a bunch of stuff I'm doing today out and about. So, but I like it when my days are hectic. It keeps me out of trouble, at least for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think we're a lot alike in that respect. We're not, we say we want to have a day where we don't do anything, and all it does is, like, put us in slow-mo, and it's not a very exciting day. So, I too prefer to be kept busy, even though a lot of times I complain and say, I want to just sit down in my recliner all day. I really don't.
You really don't.
Yeah, I really don't like doing that all day.
I think it's an interesting topic we're talking about, and it's a very expansive, as everybody's going to see as we start discussing, because there's so many facets to that, dealing with respect, being open-minded, and just being calm with regard to your own convictions and attitudes about things. You know, it's healthy to have strong convictions, but it's not healthy to take yourself so serious that you become overbearing towards other people. And if people could kind of get their own attitude in check, they would find that it would be easier for them to talk to other people that had opinions that maybe were a little different than their own. It would be more of a discussion instead of an argument. So many arguments are just based on people having strong opinions and just simply not hearing the other person and realizing they're not that far off. They just have a slightly different vantage of looking at something. And a lot of arguments would just be simple discussions if people could just simply be more respectful to each other. It sounds easier said than done, and it is, but it really comes down to just being respectful to other people and allowing other people to feel their own way through life and not always be superimposing your take on things on other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that a lot of the things are based on our own experiences. And, of course, our own experiences are based on the way we deal with things. And, of course, the way we deal with things is based on our experience. So it's kind of like a nutshell that we wander around in. So every now and then we have to step out of the nutshell and take in a little bit of input from somebody else who's in a different nutshell. And I think that being open to other people's experiences teaches us a lot, and maybe sometimes maybe saves us even a little bit of grief. And I think that being open-minded, of course, you and I have talked about this a million times, mm-hmm. having an open mind and being able to hear other people's point of view is incredibly important. For one thing, it doesn't keep you in that place of where you're really all alone. I don't think anybody wants to really be all alone. And if you never open up to other people's feelings or their opinions, then you're always alone. So let's first of all talk about couples. Now, we have had two very different lives, very different and yet similar, but very different. I have a slew of children. I have been married one time to the same man. I met him when I was actually 17 years old, and we didn't date when I was 17, but that's when I met him. And he was married before, was married when I first met him, and he and his wife, we did dance together a couple times, but there was nothing going on between us at all, and I had other guys that I was dating. And when he and his first wife separated, then it was even a while before we had anything to do with each other really seriously. But other boyfriends when I was very young, and then my husband, and that's been it. And that road has been up and down and full of bumps and full of good times and also riddled with some bad times. So you, on the other hand, have been married a couple different times, and you also have gone into a different career kind of place, a little bit different from me, even though Shelley and I are very compatible as friends. But we're also very, very different. Shelley Shelley's more analytical. I'm more general about things. I tend to assess a great big picture and try to work with a great big picture. And even though Shelley always sees the big picture, Shelley's one of those kind of people who can go around and pick out the little intricate details that need to be repaired. I tend to ignore those. So we are very different. We are very, very different, and yet we're very compatible as friends. And that's been true almost since the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we are really different and have grown up differently, Shelley's childhood was much different than mine, and but it didn't seem to matter. You know, I mean, it didn't really seem to, we had a common thread when we met because we worked at the same place. So a lot of times that's important in a relationship, that common thread. A lot of times you don't make friends with somebody that you just meet because there is no common thread that pulls you together.
Well, interestingly, when you say we have a common thread, you and I, even though our life's experiences were very different. I never had any children. You know, I was married once and divorced very early on. You've been married for, you know, what, over 30 years?
47. 47 in May.
Over 40 years, almost 50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, I was divorced. I was re-engaged, but I never got married again. But I never had any children of my own because of my health issues. You know, and you have four children, and mm-hmm. many, many grandchildren. So there, our lives are very, very different. Very, very different experiences. Like you said, our childhoods were very different. Yet you and I have a common thread with work ethic, with.
Mm-hmm.
With compassion, with just generally, you know, instantly liking other people,
mm-hmm.
being comfortable with other people, being comfortable in leadership roles. So there was our common thread, and even though our individual life experiences were completely different from each other, we had this common ground that attracted us to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way we thought, the way we felt towards other people and things like that. So that's what clicked with us. And because you put a different spin on it than I did, it intrigued me, and I liked hearing what you had to say because it made me more well-rounded, and I like that. I didn't like being stuck in the way I thought and did things, even though my basic sensitivities and moralities remained intact. The way I reacted to people grew and improved during our friendship. So I like to hear your take on things because it helped me become better. And I think that's what's important, that people need to be open-minded. I didn't flip on everything. You and I didn't always agree. Sometimes you
Right.
said things, and I didn't change my take on it because I still felt comfortable, but I respected the fact that you felt different to me. It
Mm-hmm.
wasn't important to me that you feel the same way in order for us to still be friends. Because it
Right.
was a matter of opinion, and because you were coming from a different place than me, I knew we were never going to agree on that particular subject. And how many times did you and I have discussions where I said, well, let's agree to disagree then? You know,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to change my stance. I came to that opinion based on my life's experience. You came to your decision based on your life experiences. And we had enough respect for each other that sometimes we would just simply agree to disagree. And I think that that's an art for people to be able to go there.
Well, and I think it's imperative to a good relationship because we're not all supposed to totally agree with each other. There is supposed to be a difference of opinion because it affects us differently. If
Right.
you, it's like an allergy, for God's sakes. You can eat an apple, I can't. You know, so does that mean we're not going to be friends? it is about... And we say this a lot, too, and I am a big, big believer in this, and that's embracing other people's differences.
Right.
I met Katie this week for the very first time, and I'm going to be blatantly honest about this, and I hope everybody doesn't see the dark side of Rini when I say all of this, but it is true. I've been showing my house to sell, and I've had all kinds of people come through the front door. And I was like, you know, some of them I fell right in love with, I so wanted them to buy this house because I love this house, and I thought, oh, God, they'll be so happy here. Little kids, pets, all of the above, you know, grandma's going to live with them. I'm like, oh, this is perfect, right? Well, the other day, I got a call at like 8:30 in the morning, right after the show. Can I show your house this morning? I said, when would you like to be here? In about 45 minutes, she says to me. I said, okay, as long as you're not going to critique my housekeeping. And she laughed, and she said, absolutely not. I said, okay, come ahead. Now, I have a little dog by the name of Chewbacca, and Chewbacca is incredibly friendly and thinks that everybody loves him like the family does, so he can be a bit obnoxious. So when you walk in the door, you know, he jumps all over you and is so excited to see you. When Spike and I come home from going grocery shopping or to the doctor's or something, whoever's home opens the door, this little dog runs full speed out the front door, jumps all over us, jumps in the car, then runs back to the house and makes this leap into the house. It's hysterical. It's like a thing that we do every day, right? Well, these people knock on the door, and I look outside to make sure there's no kids, because if it's a little person, Chew thinks he can be that way with everybody, so he'll jump right on them and knock them over. So I see two ladies, and I'm kind of like taken off guard by the one lady who is dressed in full garb as a Muslim. She's got black robes on. Her face is covered. All I can see are glasses. The bottom half of her face is covered. The top half of her face is covered. And long, long robes. And her hands are covered with tattoos. Kind of like spiritual tattoos. And I was like, wow. Well, the dog runs out of the house, and this lady hurdles the back of my husband's truck into the bed of the truck. And I'm like, oh, my God, and she's screaming. So, of course, I go running out, and I said, I'm sorry, I saw adults, and I you know, most adults just deal with Chewbacca, and I gathered him up and brought him in the house and put him out back. Well, I was really taken off guard by this lady. And I thought to myself, first of all, why is anybody that afraid of a dog? She must have had a bad episode. And indeed, she had been bitten as a child. Came in the house, and I hear a Jersey accent through all these robes. And I'm like very, I don't know, I guess, first of all, confused, and second of all, interested in what the story is here, right? And she came in, she apologized, and she said, a dog bit me when I was a little girl, and I'm still afraid of them, and I said, I'm sorry. I said, I usually ask people, you know, if they're afraid, and I put signs out front so that people know about the dog in case they are afraid. They can say, please take the dog away, and I do. And if there's kids, we put Chewy in one of the back bedrooms anyway. So anyway, she comes in. We start looking at the house, and I am really watching her, trying to get a handle on what the deal is, right? And the Jersey accent in these robes just blew me away, I got to tell you. I mean, I was like, what is this? You know, I don't even get this setup, right? And so we start talking, and her husband is, she sees the big living room. And she says, oh, my God. She said, so you have a haven, and you have the other part of the house where the family lives, and you have a normal life and everything, and then you have this beautiful room. And I said, yes. I said, isn't it great? I said, when you have a whole bunch of kids. She has six children, four boys and two girls. And I said, oh, my God, this is the perfect house for you. This is just so perfect for you. And she tells me that she and her husband have a religious following. They have a place on Belvedere. And I said, oh, I think I know where you mean. And I said, what is your preference? I mean, I don't really understand, you know, what significance all these robes have and all this stuff. And she said, I'm a Muslim. And I said, oh, how interesting. I said, I really don't know much about Muslims. I don't, I got thinking back, and years ago in Ithaca near Cornell University, I met several Muslims because they would come there to go to school at Cornell University. But I was very young, and I didn't quite get the, you know, I didn't really understand any of it. So we talked a little bit, and I said, you know, I'm a reverend, a non-denominational reverend, and I do weddings, and I've done funerals here in this room. And she reached out and touched my hand, and she said, I knew that I felt some kind of kinship to you. And I said, oh, how sweet, you know. So, but I ended up being very, very impressed by her because she was still who she was, but she also had this air of, belief and a few other things that I'm big on. So anyway, when she left, I had a tremendous amount of respect for her. But my initial look, I'm ashamed to tell you, was judgmental. So it was like, you know.
But see, the difference between you and other people, and that's a great story, by the way, because it just goes to show people that if you allow yourself to come out of that first impression, and we all do it, okay? I'm not prejudiced in any way, shape, or form, but I have to be honest. If I'm walking down the street and I see certain ethnicities coming towards me, I become more hypervigilant in how I'm conducting myself than if somebody that looked more like me is walking towards me. And that's just for a lot of different reasons. Some of it's sociological, some of it's TV shows and news and stuff like that. But because I realize that and I don't like it and it makes me uncomfortable, if the person were to stop and talk to me, I instantly go into my comfort zone and I open up to then see who they are as an individual, not as a group or as a stereotype, you know. And that's where people fault themselves. People feel that gut reaction to somebody that looks different than them for whatever reason. And then if the person approaches them, they stay with that. And they're standoffish or they're fearful or they're disrespectful or whatever because they allowed that initial visceral reaction to then influence how they treat that person. So it's not necessarily wrong that sometimes we get that, because a lot of times it's not even coming from us. It's coming from attitudes that we pick up on, and sometimes we react to people through influences that we're not even aware we've taken in over the years. The difference between somebody that can be open-minded or not is the person that realizes that, feels that emotion and says, oh, that's not really appropriate, and puts it in check and remains open-minded while they're dealing with that person. Now, like I said yesterday, sometimes our reaction to somebody is because our gut is telling us there's something not quite right about this person. But it's never going to be because they're a different religion. It's never going to be because they're a different color or creed or nationality or whatever. If there's something not quite right about somebody that we're dealing with, it's based on how they act in life. It's based on their morality. It's based on what they do and how they treat other people. It's never going to be based on an attribute. Understand that religion, the color of our skin, things like that, these are attributes. That's never going to make somebody a good person or a bad person. It's how they treat other people and how they act in life, you know. Are they decent? Are they moral? Are they ethical? Are they compassionate? You know, do they love other people? This is how you judge somebody. And you can tell usually very quickly, like speaking to this woman, you found out that she had the same goals for her families that you have for yours. So you found there was more of a common ground there.
Yep. We immediately found the common thread. Immediately. And it pulled us together. I think that common thread analogy is appropriate for any kind of friendship. And I think that, you know, I thought about her all the rest of the day.
Yep.
And some of the things that crossed my mind were, I'll bet if I was like that. Everybody else for sure is. And I hope that everybody else gives her the same space that I did to find the common thread. And that's what's important socially with our peers, socially with the friends that we already have. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody has different stuff. So, again, I think that when we meet people in the street, when we talk to people, I'm always amazed because I think that I am a good people reader. And I can't tell you how many times I'm totally wrong. Totally wrong. And I always laugh about it later. I think to myself, thank God I don't stand on first impression because I wouldn't have any friends sometimes. And that's, you know, because you do.
Yep.
Life sends you to a certain judgmentality, even when you fight against it like I do. It still lends you because of experiences and because of other things that have happened. But if you keep your mind open, I mean, you never know what you could be missing because you've judged somebody by their appearance. You never know what you could be the best friend you've ever had. Big shame. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a bit about, couples as in, you know, significant others, not just friendship. What do you think?
You know,
one of the
when you're talking about relationship, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, that type of thing, you know, or even within gay couples. So it's any kind of a relationship where you have two significant others. Okay, there's a great book out, and it can even be used for gay couples, by the way, by John Gray. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Because even when you have a gay couple, you still have a feminine and a masculine counterpart in the relationship. So a lot of the differences would still apply in those type of relationships. But the neat thing about that book is that he actually talks about how chemically or genetically men and women actually perceive life differently. When a man can understand more how a woman's brain operates and how she perceives life and why she acts the way she does, and when a woman can understand how a man perceives life and that it's not that they're trying to be difficult or whatever, that they physiologically are programmed to respond to life differently, the two different sexes, okay, in general. And obviously there's exceptions to the rules where you have men that operate more from the feminine and you have women that operate more from the masculine. But as a general rule, genetically they fall into these two patterns. And a lot of marriages have actually been saved by people reading this book and having a better understanding that the husband's not caring, the wife isn't overly emotional. It's how they're programmed. And once you understand that, you can work with saying, okay, well, if I say it this way, it's just going to crush her and I'm going to get a bad reaction, but all I have to do is change one word and my wife will be fine. And then the wife understands that, it's a fascinating book. And I've met people that have actually gone to some of his workshops and read the book. And like I said, it actually saved their marriage because they understood each other so much better, and they understood that the other partner wasn't being careless or callous or uncaring. They just operate completely differently. The sexes are very, very much different, which is why he titled the book that. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It's like we're from two different planets.
Right. Well, and, you know, I think that you become aware of that in recess in nursery school. I really do. I think that you, even though you may not be able to articulate the difference, you see the difference very, very early on as a little boy or a little girl. You see the differences. And in most cases, it's kind of fun. Of course, doesn't get as involved when you're that young, but you still understand, you know, it's okay for the little boy to feel, sit in the mud and feel dirty, and most little girls don't want to do that. Not that there aren't some that do, but the generalized principles of who they are when they're very young are already pretty much there and visible if anybody's paying attention. So
right.
I want to know what you think is the most important message you can give to a couple to be successful in their relationship. First, what you would expect of the female and what you would expect of the male for them to have a relationship that's strong and that endures time. What do you think it is?
Well, I mean, one of the first things is, is honesty, obviously. Not doing anything behind each other's backs or, you know, things like that, is being honest. But I think the main thing is to never attack verbally. If there is a disagreement, I think one of the things that destroys relationships is when there is a disagreement and one or both go into attack mode. And instead of talking something out and maybe even coming to a compromise position, they start tearing the other person apart because things said
Is that your phone?
Yeah.
What's making that noise?
An emergency alert. It's an Amber alert.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm on your TV?
Oh, it comes through on my cell phone. I get Amber alerts on my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
That must mean an Amber alert is for a child, so that must mean there was a child abducted. It's Sarasota, Florida, Silver Dodge, Ram pickup. But they haven't sent the picture of the child yet, but the image is coming through. But, yeah, that's something that they do. Cell phone carriers now, some of them participate in that. Sprint is one of the ones that does. So whenever there's a silver alert, you know, for, like, an older person who's driving, who has Alzheimer's or something, or the Amber alert for children, these periodically come over on my phone. Now
mine's doing it.
Yep. Because what they do is they go through all the cell phone carriers.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's a good thing that they do that. So, but there's no picture yet. They're just saying that the pickup truck, it's a 2003 Silver Dodge Ram pickup. License number is 975, T like in Thomas, Z like in Zebra, G like in George. And it's in the Sarasota area. So evidently there's a child abducted in that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that goes.
That came across my phone. That's the first time my phone's ever done that, though, so that must be
Yeah, I've
new.
Gotten them periodically. But anyway, so like I said, the bottom line is one of the first things, and I'm going to the negative first. Obviously, people know that you have to care about each other and be respectful and be supportive and things like that. But a lot of people, and I went through this myself when Charlie and I were first married, is that if you're not careful to like fight fair, for lack of a better way of putting it, is that when you have a disagreement, don't automatically turn it into a fight. And I think this is a big mistake that couples make in the beginning. Like I said, I did it myself, you know. But don't fight about things. It destroys. You say things that you can never take back that injure the other person. And even if you make up and go on, that terrible thing you said to them is going to stick in the back of their mind. And it you've already injured the relationship, and that's going to come up. Every time you fight in the future, that mean thing is going to come up again, and it can eventually destroy your relationship. So I think that's one of the biggest pieces is to not go into attack mode just because you have a disagreement.
Well, and that all kind of coincides with what I'm going to say, and that is you have to put the other person first. If you only always think about your own comfort, your own desires, your own needs, the other person eventually turns away because we all need to be cared for. So my advice to any couple, even if it's a friendship, is to take turns being the one that comes first. And sometimes it can go for a long time when somebody else is going through something. And other times it can change every day. But one of the most important parts of having a really, really loving, caring, appropriate relationship is that you think about the other person before you think about yourself every now and then. I don't mean to be a martyr either. There's a happy balance in there. There's a balance that promotes a good relationship. Sometimes you are the needy one, and hopefully the other half of your couple recognizes that after a certain amount of time and feeds that. And then other times they are the needy one. But if you wake up every morning thinking that you're going to put the other person first, if the day doesn't manifest itself that way, that's okay. But you see, you had your heart and your mind opened to be in there.
Right.
That's what's needed. And it is, for me, I have friends who call me, and sometimes they call me and say, is everything all right with you? I've been thinking about you. And I say, yes, everything is all right. And I hear in their voice, and I say, are you okay? What's up? And the real reason they called me, even though I know they love me, and I know that they want to know that I'm okay, they need to unload. They need to tell me what's going on with them. So I just shut up and listen. And that's what I'm talking about. For good friendships, good relationships, and a couple, of course, is the epitome of the relationship arena. A couple.
Right.
And I'm people glad that are going... Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad that you made the point that, but there also has to be a healthy balance, because I've seen relationships where one individual always looked out for the best interests of their partner, but it was never reciprocal. And after, after 15 years together, now the relationship is almost like destructive to the person who was always kind, because now they're in such a habit pattern that the woman in this relationship has spent 15 years looking out for her husband, and her husband just kind of like looked out for himself, and it took her 15 years to finally realize that dynamic, and now she actually feels like she's falling out of love with him. Where during that 15 years, it's like she couldn't do enough, but she relinquished her own needs to his needs, always looked out for him, and it was never reciprocal. So there has to be a balance. You also have to make sure that you're happy and healthy in the relationship. Don't be unreasonably demanding, but if there's something that's important to you, you have to let your partner know that it's something that's important to you, so that 10 years down the road, like you said, you don't martyr yourself. You don't all of a sudden come to a point and say, you know what, I haven't had a happy life. I've been so concerned about your happiness, I never took care of my own happiness. So there does have to be a balance. Sometimes you have to say, look, I really need this, let's do this, but as long as it's always a discussion, as long as it's always done from love, compassion, and kindness, you guys will be able to go back and forth. I see other couples' relationships where sometimes they do what the woman wants to do, sometimes they do what the guy wants to do, because they do have that healthy interaction, Sometimes, and they make a joke out of it, I guess I got, I won this time again, and they actually make a joke out of it because it is almost 50-50 with them how they make their decisions. We know one couple that's expert at that. And they've been married for almost 30 years, I think 27 years, and they have a phenomenal marriage. But they're each one makes the other one the important one, and yet every now and then they throw their own weight in there and they say, you know what, I really need this time. And because they're so used to always looking out for the other one, if one of them says, look, I really need this time, the other one will just back right off and say, okay, well, if it's that important, then we'll do it your way, And they're in such a habit of doing that with each other, so they both end up getting their way on a regular basis. And so they have a really, really wonderfully working marriage. But if only one of the person, if only the man or the woman is the one that's always compromising and always looking out for the other, over time it will diminish the relationship because the one person will start feeling like a martyr, start feeling like they're being taken advantage of, and it will eventually diminish the affection.
Mm-hmm. I've got Monica on the line. Hi, Monica.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, honey.
Morning,
Kelly. I thought you might want, I thought because of the story that you shared, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I got a lot of feedback on the story that you shared. Yes. And because you were so open and so honest, a lot of people were like, wow, you know.
Too honest.
That happened to
me. I regret half of what I said.
No, you shouldn't have, because I had a couple young people that I worry about all the time, and they called me, and they said, I've been there. And I said, then you need to think about this. You really need to think about this. And both of them were girls. There was no – I did get a little bit of feedback from a couple guys, but it was just, wow, that kind of – you know, they just said that to me. They were like, wow, that was really honest. And I said, well, that's what she was trying to do, was show everybody that – stuff happens, and pretending that it didn't happen isn't healthy for either one of you,
right?
I mean, it just
isn't.
So we are talking about couples. I don't know whether you've heard any of the show at this point in time, but we talked about couples, of course, being the most I'm not going to say important, but the most prevalent relationship is couples. And, of course, there's also friends, and Shelley and I discussed our friendship a little bit, and there's siblings, and there's parents versus children and vice versa. There's coworkers, and there's people that we meet in the street. And I told the story of the lady that came to my house this week to look at the house who was dressed in complete Muslim garb and took me totally by surprise. And I felt weird. You know, I thought to myself, wow, this isn't, you know, and I preach about this all the time, about not prejudging, and I was. And I'm so happy that I didn't stay in that place, because by the time she left, I realized that she does it a different way than I do, but we were, you know, we were really sisters. And, you know, kids and all this other kind of stuff. So it was like everything that we talk about not being judgmental, not passing judgment on the way somebody looks and all that kind of stuff, I did that. And luckily I slapped myself up around the face a little bit and realized that that was stupid and made a friend. And we also talked about the fact that Shelley and I discovered a common thread very early on in our relationship, even though we come from totally, totally different backgrounds. And yet we've become very, very, very good friends. And we have really different lives now, except for the compatibility that we find when we're together. So it's interesting. So I asked Shell about what she thinks is one of the most important things to have a good couple relationship. And her answer was to not lose your temper and to listen to another person's point of view and things like that, which is very important. I'd like to ask you the same question. What do you think is the most important thing about having a good couple relationship?
To me, the most important thing is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Trusting in them to know that they are not going to hurt you and vice versa. And having the two things, trust and respect. If you respect that person and he respects you, you got it made. And then after that, trust. Because you know they're not going to hurt you. Physically, mentally, anything. They always have your utmost happiness at the top of their mind. And, of course, you do too. So if that happens, you got a perfect relationship right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my suggestion, is the fact that it works out nicely if every day when you wake up you plan on putting them first. And doesn't always happen
uh-huh.
that way, because some days it's your turn. But recognizing that in each other is imperative to a good relationship, even if you're talking about friends. I mentioned to Shelley, you know, I have a lot of people that call me and touch base with me on a regular basis. Some I see, some I don't. And if they call me and say, hey, Reen, I just thought I'd call, and how are you? Is everything all right? What's going on? Is Spike okay and everything? And I answer their questions, but I hear something in their voice, and I say, what's going on with you? And the real reason they called is because they needed to talk to me. But they always start the conversation on a level ground that, you know, opens me up to tell them if there's anything I need to tell them. But I always hear in their voice that they really called because they needed to talk to me. So I always say, what's going on? And then they talk. That I am blessed with friends, and that's why. And I think that your spousal relationship is the same way. You know, like if I get up in the morning and I walk out in the kitchen and I'm already bitching about something, and Spike just looks at me and says something and didn't even hear what I said, I realize he's in the same place. So then I try to give him some comfort. If I walk out there and I'm like that, he's like, what's the matter with you this morning? You know, and then I realize that today is, or for this instant, this is going to be more about me. There is a balance. I love that you said trust. Because I do trust, and because my relationship with Spike has never been to the places that some relationships go, I do trust him, and he trusts me. And I mean, there's been jealousies in 47 years every now and then, because let's face it, I am a knockout. I mean, you know, but but you know, there is trust, and there has always been trust. So, but I do find it interesting that after your first go round, trust is most important to you, and I think that it's important to recognize why trust is so important to you, because the first time around, there wasn't any. So it does make a big difference. Now, how do you feel about your siblings? I know how Shelley feels about hers. She loves her sister right. to death, and they are inseparable. Do you have siblings, Monica?
I have one sister,
mm-hmm.
and we get along fine. Now, we get along fine, but there's been ups and downs. I mean, she's done a few things that, to me personally, that have not been really, you know, very good. But, you know, I've forgiven her. She's made up for it. It's not like we talk every day or anything like that. She doesn't open up and share, you know, what is going on with her life, and that makes a difference. She keeps everything inside, and I've always tried to get her to, you know, spill it as far as what's mm-hmm. going on, and she just keeps her mouth closed. So, yeah, we're not that close, no. So
mm-hmm.
it would have been nice
mm-hmm.
if we were, but we're not, so.
Mm-hmm.
And she's down there in Florida. Totally.
Well, how are the age differences between the two of you?
Like 11 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not much. Yeah, we have totally different interests. I mean, she has a horse farm, you know, that sort of thing. I'm not into horses, you know, different political backgrounds. Yeah.
You
so
both
great.
March to yeah. You both march to a different drummer, but
right.
In you know, but if she needed you, if she was
oh,
in
yeah.
trouble, yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh
yeah.
Definitely.
So,
I would be there in a second, and she would be there for me in a second. Yes,
mm-hmm,
I know that.
Mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's probably the most important part. My take on siblings is like that as well. Barbara and I, the one who I lost at Christmas time, grew up, you know, as a team when we were real young. Then we parted ways during a little bit of time because I've always been the boss, and you know that takes a toll on siblings. If one of you is always the boss, and that has always been me, and I like to say that it's because people either didn't step up to the plate and waited for me to do it. I like to give excuses as to why I'm like that, but I think honestly it's just my personality, and I don't, a lot of times I don't want to even be that person, but that person sneaks out every damn time, every time, even when I don't want to take it, you know. And Barbara was more, much more materialistic than I ever was, and certain things were more important to her than they were to me. However, you know, I dare, and she's like half my size most of our lives, I dare anybody to even look like they're going to hurt me, and she'd be up one side of you and down the other, and same here. But we did have issues as young kids, as teenagers, as adults, and even in later years, there's been times when she's lived in my home, and I could get really, really angry with her. And that's a big thing about real love, you guys, that real love can conjure up real anger. And if you don't care, anger sometimes doesn't even enter into it because you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So siblings, it can be tough with. Now, Joey was like, Joey was born in 55. I was born, so Joey and I were 7 years apart. But he was like my soulmate. He could do anything, and I could do anything, and it didn't matter. We made amends for the other one all the time and looked out for each other. Patty is considerably younger than I am, and she was always treated like a child by me. And now she's an adult, and she's in a good place. She's had many, many ups and downs, but I still have always treated her like, you know, like she was a child. Even now that she's like 55 years old, you know, I still have a tendency to treat her like she's a child. And, of course, Danny is only 10 months older than my oldest son. So he's like my kid, too. But the relationship with all of them is based on love. But there's always been other, you know, there's always been other stuff. But I think our siblings are the ones that really teach us how to be good friends. Don't you guys think that's true?
Well, sure, and I've mentioned it on the show before, but my sister and I didn't speak for 10 years. We were best friends, I mean best friends, inseparable best friends. Even when she moved to Florida and I still lived in New York, I was coming down once or twice a year and spending anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks at my sister's home with her kids, and you know, and we spoke every day on the phone. Like I said, when we lived in different states, so even though we were physically separated from each other, we still maintained a constant. And when we lived in New York together, we grew up. Everybody thought nobody believed we were sisters because we were so inseparable. And we also were only 11 months apart, but we don't really look like each other. So a lot of people thought we were friends. They didn't think we were sisters. And then something happened in our lives. We both went through some stresses, and we stopped talking to each other for about 10 years. There was a major falling out, and we kind of each went our own way. And back in 2011, and we had started softening towards each other through the nieces and nephews. So, you know, we would take messages back and forth, and slowly but surely we started going back to family functions and crossing each other's paths and being civil. And then once the ice broke, I think we had some sort of a holiday thing over here at my house, and my sister came with her husband and his son. And once that affection opened up again, it was like nothing ever happened. And it took about 6 months for us to really get on solid ground with each other because it had been so long. It felt fragile in the beginning. But now it's, you know, this has been several years, and now we're probably closer than we were before the rift happened, because we've just come to a new understanding and an appreciation and found out how much we really missed that connection we had with each other, because we were best friends for over 40 years, you know, and now we're back on track with each other. So it's important to understand, especially with siblings, more so than romantic relationships, although I've seen it happen with romantic relationships that rekindled after some sort of a separation, is that there is a bond there. And even if you think something is can't be healed or can't be rejuvenated, it's not the case, because we really were at opposite ends with each other, and everything just smoothed right out, and we're back being fast friends.
Uh-huh. Well, and, of course, I was already friends with Shelley when all that took place, so I was pretty much witness to the things that took place there. And, again, I want to say that because of the intense love that existed, the hate was just as intense when they went through
mm-hmm.
everything that they went through. And that's another part of that love-hate thing that I think is very, very interesting, but you see it all the time. How about parents and kids? Now, Monica, are your parents still alive?
No, they're both gone.
Mm-hmm. Mine too.
Yeah.
Mine too. Shelley's parents are both alive, although she's not very close to her dad, but her mom and she live together.
Right.
Give a quick, we're already down to 2 minutes, so
I think
we may not be able to.
Whole nother show.
Yeah, relationship with parents. I think that's probably a good idea. So if you were going to give words of wisdom, Monica, about relationships, what would they be in like 4 or 5 words? Just choose good words.
I would say,
choose good words. Well, you said
relationship
trust.
Between a man and a woman would be respect
yep.
and trust. You got to have
yep.
that. You got to, before you go into a relationship, use your mind, not your heart. Think things through, you know, and
mm-hmm.
don't think with your lust. Use
yes.
your head.
Good idea.
That's the biggest
good idea.
Thing I've learned.
Good idea. Those are good. Shelley, what do you think?
Kindness, which is what we talk about on the show all the time, just always go towards compassion and kindness, especially if somebody you know is acting unkind to you, instantly go into compassion mode, understanding that they wouldn't be doing that if they weren't in a bad place. So I think compassion mm-hmm. and kindness is key to having good relationships with people.
Mm-hmm. So I think, based on what you two just said to me, my analyzation of what you both said is you need to be able to, first of all, read between the lines, understand the feelings of somebody that you really care about, and try to be empathetic to what's going on with them before you make any kind of an assessment. But I think trust, I think
right.
respect, I think all those words are imperative to each and every relationship that we have. Hands down. I think that if you don't respect somebody, you really don't love them. And it's hard sometimes. It is hard sometimes, and I get that. But you have to find what about them you do respect and hang on to that during bumpy times. And
right.
certainly establish a trust between each other. Know that at the end of the day, when there's no other choices left, you and they will do what's best for the other person. That's, for me, the epitome of any relationship, that if I can't do it, Shelley will. If I can't do it, Spike will. Those things are imperative to any kind of good relation and a peace of mind about the people that you surround yourself with. So, good show. I think you guys got some amazing input in regard to these, and we will do a show one day about parents and children, because I do think that that's where it all starts, with your mom and dad. So everybody go out there and have a great day. Thanks for coming by today, Monica. And God bless everybody. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, ladies.